This is exactly right.
Karen, have you heard of Handsome? It's a new podcast from the brilliant comedians Tig Notaro, Fortune Feimster, and Mae Martin.
I have heard of it. People love it. Every week, this handsome trio of hosts takes a question from a famous friend, people like Stephen Colbert, Reese Witherspoon, Jamila Jamil, the Indigo Girls, and then they do their best to answer that question with plenty of hilarious detours along the way.
You're going to love hanging out with Tig, Fortune, and Mae every week, so go check out Handsome wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Listen to a new episode of Handsome every Tuesday.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, Karen.
Happy. Oh, hello, Chris.
Have you been doing spring cleaning today?
What'd you say?
Is spring cleaning a thing? Where because of spring?
Yes.
Why is it? Why is it?
Well, personally, I'll answer for myself. In the wintertime, I feel like everything is like, you're out cold and you keep using the same blanket over and over and you kind of are like locked down a little bit.
Yeah.
So when it's spring and you're throwing open those windows and kind of loving the weather and opening the window, let the air breeze through, then you start kind of like cleaning things. I literally just cleaned out all kinds of clothes out of my closet to donate because I realized I was just shoving shirts, like t-shirts over and over into a shelf.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't know what was in there, and I also wasn't wearing a lot of it. Yeah.
It's the only time I tuck in my shirt is when I'm jamming my fingers in a drawer. And that you're right. It's a window thing. I don't know why I left the house solely to buy Windex, a thing I've never strived to yearn for. And I got so excited. And I even grabbed, you know, there's some of these lunatics that prefer newspaper on glass. Well,
that's the best way. That's how you're supposed to do it.
I don't agree. It leaves streaks of ink. You need newsprint, maybe.
Oh, maybe they don't make them like they used to.
That's why, if I didn't sound elderly enough with just the topic that I've brought up, they don't make newsprint. I mean, print, they say print is dead, but I really mean for the sake of cleaning mirrors.
Yeah.
The ink is dead. They use
now. I had it because I have two tall windows or several tall windows. So I had a window cleaner guy that came to get like all the spotty, hard to get. And I said, hey, I tried to clean these myself and it didn't work. And he was like, did you try to use like Windex and whatever?
Yeah.
And he said, and this is might be like a conspiracy theory, he said Windex puts wax in their product. I shouldn't be name checking them, but so that you have to keep using it.
That's insane. That's like Carmex. You know,
right, that makes your lips chapped.
Yeah. They put fibers of glass. Well, our love to the Carmex and Windex people. We're still available if you need us to give a shout out commercial wise. But you cut up our lips and you put wax on our windows. It's all been a lie.
You could have been the window guy, you know, propagandizing so that I always used a window guy instead of trying to Windex the windows myself.
Yeah.
Anything's possible in today's America.
I forgot about window guys. Did they come up on a scaffolding with a top hat and you kind of, oh, I'm in my negligee. Is it ever like that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, first of all, I feel like you're combining chimney sweeps, so the top hat part.
Yeah, with used like to be a, the same outfit. Clean. And you still live in a multi-story house, right?
Mm-hmm. In Victorian England,
a lot of scaffolding.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what a strong start. And I'll go ahead and be the reason for that. Just topic alone.
Amazing.
Anyway, I've been spring cleaning. I could have just told you that. I'm very excited about our guest today. Are you?
I am.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I think our opening conversation had a touch of self-consciousness about it.
Right.
Because we really like this guest.
Well, last time we were self-conscious and it was a great episode. So why switch things up?
Why change it now?
Yeah, I agree. I'll go. I'm going to introduce our guest, Karen.
Do it.
Okay, I will. Our next guest is a podcaster, comedian, and rapper. I use rapper. Everyone, put your ears together for Open Mic Eagle.
Hi.
Woo!
Hi.
That was. I liked your banter a lot.
Oh, thanks.
Thank God.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, it was really great. You gave very practical reasons why you should like wash blankets. Like that's a really good reason, because the reason I usually do it is that they smell.
Right.
That means I've waited too long.
Right. Yeah.
But if I think like you, then I'll be more proactive.
Yeah.
Just do it seasonally.
Seasonally.
Yeah.
At least.
I mean, a couple times a year, maybe.
And I did get the answer I was looking for. I didn't realize it was because I was starting to open my windows. And then it's like everything must go because it doesn't get cold here in the winter. But yes, I use the same. I didn't wash my sheets. I'm going to say at times for a couple months. Now, I know that grosses you both out.
I mean, I can pretend like it grosses me out, and then that would make it seem like I do it a lot more frequently.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be honest.
Let's at least be honest on this episode, at the very least.
Yeah.
I'll try, but sometimes honesty gets into stuff that I don't necessarily want to admit publicly, and then what do I do then?
Just keep going. Just double down.
I feel like that's kind of what lies are for.
Yeah.
It's for stuff you don't want to admit publicly.
Right.
You know?
So you're not revealing how gross you can be. That's really the main reason I lie.
Guys, when you don't wash your sheets for, let's just say, 1 month, but and
two,
that
three.
Might not be true, but if it is.
Yeah.
What color are your sheets?
That's the thing. We got to
multi?
Plaid? Are they a plaid?
Are you asking when I bought them or now? Oh, that's gross. Because now they're tie-dyed. It's like I brought my sheets to a guar show. That is the issue, Karen. I have red, like tomato red sheets.
Hot.
That is very sexy. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, it goes with the theme of my room. It's an outdoorsy theme. And I got red sheets. So if I
What's
had
red
white...
outdoors? Is it like rivers of blood? Like what?
Outdoors in hell.
You're very right to say that. Red is rarely a color that exists when you're in the woods.
But poppies. That's a poppy field.
It's outdoorsy with lanterns, but red... gingham is the print, the classic let's have a picnic print, and then I got red sheets to go with those red. So, and I have multiple sets of red sheets, so I think this problem, my point is, if I got white sheets, like a classic white sheet, which I've never had, I would clean
that?
Them all the time.
Karen, your sheets aren't white.
No, they are not.
Yeah, like only hotels and hospitals.
That's right. Why I want them.
That's why?
Yeah. Where am I more comfortable? Where do I get the best sleep? Maybe it's because it's a better mattress, but hotels.
Just give the sheets all the credit.
Yeah. And I'm going to make them real tight at the end so my feet have to be horizontal like a ballerina or parallel.
Just flatten them out.
Yeah.
Just really stretch out your
the pain.
Achilles
and then I go right into blissful sleep.
Yeah, you spend the whole night trying to loosen them up, and yeah, it's yeah. bad.
Yeah. Sleep yes. like an Egyptian.
Mike, when you are on tour, do you stay at, like, are you going to hotels constantly?
Yeah.
And do you like that lifestyle?
So it's not that I like it, but I do miss it sometimes when I'm at home too long.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I miss the sort of disorienting feeling of waking up in a blacked out room.
Yes.
Opening the window because I'm staying, like, downtown in some city, and it really taking me a while to figure out what city I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
I miss that feeling sometimes because it's like, I don't know, it's a little bit of, it's like a chaotic prize.
Yeah.
Yes.
That you win, you know?
It's glamorous. It's showbiz.
You could be in Boston or you could be in Houston.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what you like, that's either great or terrible.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I always say that's what I like just doing the shows. I don't like the travel part, but I do. I just don't like, oh crap, I have to buy a bunch of flights today. I have to get to the airport. That's what I don't like, which used to be the premise of this podcast.
Yeah.
Let's record doing a thing we like the least. But that staying in hotels and waking up in them is, it feels good.
Because when you got the right hotel, it's hard to leave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you got the nice one with a spacious room and a nice hotel bar situation, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's close to the venue, so it wasn't,
yeah,
it wasn't a big to-do to get out or in. And, you know, you're like, oh, I wish I could just take this hotel with me.
Yeah.
To the next city.
Yes.
You know, but that's just not how hotels work.
Unless you're staying at the Marriott.
Pretty much. Yeah. The Sheraton somewhere.
Yeah. I did a Marriott when I was just in Milwaukee, but then in Chicago, where you're from, right, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I stayed at, have you ever heard of the Ohio House?
I have not.
It's like an old motel, the kind where your car is right outside your door.
Those are usually scary.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, but... Sometimes they get modified into a boutique-y situation, which means they just buy new lamps.
Yeah, I have feelings about that. Because it's like, I know what this used to be.
Yeah.
So why am I paying like anywhere near a real hotel price?
Right.
When we all know what this is.
You're right. Mm-hmm. And I get fooled by it. I'm like, ooh.
It's, no, I get it.
It's so simple. And I'm on the ground floor.
And it's swanky. And they usually put little weird decorations places. They might have odd books stacked
they did have
on
books.
The shelf.
They had weird books.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I like it. I just think there should be some price differential between what this is and what we all know it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it was only like $20 cheaper, but I drove away from the venue to get to it because the thing is, I was worried about this car that I Turoed. It was like a fancy car, and there's, I have a weird thing about paying as much for the room as the parking in the hotel. And this had, I just went free parking. And it's like, just showed a bullet hole riddled motel. Well, maybe it's been renovated. And it was. And my car was right outside the window. But yes, each room had a corridor with like four or five rooms. And it's a perfect place to have gotten stabbed many times. And there was chaos in the nighttime. But it was mostly laughing, but it was right outside my door. Who laughs and then elbows their neighbor's door? But I didn't think I was going to get killed. At least.
They heard a real good joke.
Yeah.
The first step in that renovation, though, is the removal of the dirty microwave, which I'm a fan of.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. My favorite one of these places, though, have either of y'all ever stayed at I think it's called the Jupiter? It's in Portland.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one of those.
Yeah.
And that's connected to my favorite venue is the Doug Ferns right
Me
there
too.
On the same lot. But you know what's really weird about the Jupiter is that I noticed, and I don't know how a place accumulates a reputation like this or encourages this kind of behavior. But it's been about three times when I've stayed at the Jupiter and there were people very intentionally having sex in their room with the window open in the front so you could walk by and see.
I swear to God, I think it was the last Bridgetown, and we were all staying at the Jupiter, and that's the first thing I thought of. And I was like, am I being perverted? But it's like, this has a swingers vibe to it, where it feels like, here, take your key or whatever key, because it's all kind of like out in the open.
Oh, I'm just leaving a pineapple outside my door. You know what that means? Wink, wink. It means you're swingers. Did you guys know that about the pineapple?
No.
Yeah.
I just found that out recently. Yeah. I did the Joco cruise, which if anybody ever had a chance to do, it's fucking amazing. But there was this outbreak of pineapples being put on people's doors.
No way.
Yes. Like people who weren't necessarily into that lifestyle were suddenly being approached, the doors knocked on because there was a rogue person running around putting pineapples on things. But
like a sexual villain.
Yes. But it all ultimately unfolded and people found out who did it. The person who was doing it didn't know that that's what pineapples meant.
Oh, they were just delivering. I believe them.
They
thought they were being festive.
Yeah, who doesn't want a pineapple? Everyone loves the sweetest fruit.
That's quite a mistake, though.
It is quite a mistake.
Yeah. I mean,
it is. Because there were people on the cruise who were into that shit.
Yeah. You know?
Right. I'm on that guy's side, though, when someone said, don't you know what pineapples on the door means? Which is what I just did to you two. He'd be like, what? What? No. I was just giving out pineapples. I'm not trying to make people swing.
But I mean, what do you think, Mike, what do you think that person, if swinging was out of it, the idea that they're just being cute? Like that they're
It's a very cute cruise. It's an aggressively cute cruise. People are going out of their way to like do cute shit all the time. So I buy it.
Okay.
As the reason.
Okay.
What is the Joco? Not that you're here to promote that, but.
Yeah, I'm not because I don't know if they're booking me next year. This is not a sponsored post. But Jonathan Colton, the musician, organizes the Joco cruise. They've been doing it, I think, like over 10 years now. And they have musicians and comedians and improvisers and all sorts of folks on. And then there's an audience for it where they buy up the boat every year.
Wow.
That's great.
This is my second time doing it in March. And it is fucking awesome.
It sounds like the vibe is very like theater camp almost.
Yes.
Expressing myself and these are the people 100%. That will support that expression.
Yeah.
It is exactly that.
And you've done the Max FunCon stuff, right?
I have done the Max FunCon one time. This is like that on the water with booze all day.
Right. That's Jesse Thorne did do that one. There was like a cruise that we did.
And I didn't know that.
Not a ton of people came. It was mostly comics. But then you're just kind of sequestered to half the ship. They didn't get the whole boat, of course. Who gets a whole boat?
Well, when Joco started, they didn't have the whole boat either. But now they've grown to where they have the whole boat.
Oh, wow. A whole cruise ship?
It's really something.
Oh,
and
wow.
And the staff is like shook and thrilled at the same time.
Well, it's amazing. It's too late. You've efficiently promoted it, and I'd like to submit that you be booked again next year.
Well, I'd like to clip this part and send it to you.
We will clip it.
On a lease, clip, mark it, clip it, send it.
Everything after the pineapple thing.
Right.
Don't tell them that we busted them. I like that idea, though. I think the energy and... Mike, you would know this kind of best because you do comedy and you do music. But I think the energy between comedians and musicians gets very, we all want to impress each other.
Yeah.
We want to do what the other group does. We want to, which is kind of interesting because then you're right in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what that's like for you, because that kind of like impress each other, kind of let everyone's lightly in love with each other. That would be great on a cruise ship. That would be very pineapple-y.
It's really fantastic. I mean, it didn't get to pineapple levels in the green room, but it was very good. Yeah. I mean, maybe with some people it got to pineapple levels.
Right.
I can't speak for everyone. But that the best part of my two times on the cruise, the most like heart filling parts to me was that, like, you know, because there's all these shows all through the day and every night. And then afterwards, all the performers are in the green room are all just fucking gushing over each other because everybody's so cool and everybody's so talented. And it's just really an amazing assembly of people. It seems like every time, even though I've only done it twice.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
I'm always shocked when a musician that I look up to even considers stand-up comedy. I always think of it as a lower art form for some reason, because I do it.
Because you do it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. You have no appreciation for it because you can do it.
But the mutual, seeing anyone, even the biggest rock star, wants to do jokes in between songs. And once I started to realize that more and more, or see it more and more, I'm like, oh, we both like the thing the other one does. It's cool.
Yeah, we call that banter, and banter is hard.
I've been messing around with friends singing old punk songs from skateboard videos, and it's fun. It's mostly for us to have fun. But man, with jokes I tell in between songs, God, it's so easy to get a laugh. I'm like, oh man, I gotta, how do I set this up to be the case all the time?
Yeah, the bar's so low. People come to music shows, they don't expect laughter.
Right.
They want to laugh, but they don't expect it. But Karen, you're right there.
Yeah.
In the middle too. You've seen it all.
True, true. I've seen it all. Well, it's just that I haven't done it in a long time. But I was thinking of, you know, Largo and the late 90s Largo days,
yeah,
which had that kind of energy, or early 2000s, where like the thing Chris is saying, where it's like, oh, we're just the comedy show. So we're like the thing that either comes after or before.
Yeah.
But then when it all kind of gets mixed together and the musicians are hanging out, like, this is my hang and this is your hang. And so we're all kind of like, you start to then get that up close kind of love and appreciation that I think in comedy, especially in the 90s, it was so competitive and so kind of like cooler than thou. And suddenly there were musicians that were just like open and nice right to your face. And then it's like, oh, I should be like that. That's actually way cooler. Like,
yeah,
this idea that we're all kind of, you know, artsy together and it's not a competition was such a better vibe, obviously. Mm. And it's so much more fun.
And it makes it so much better to put it on a confined place with beds so you can make it sultry.
That's right. You can add pineapples to the mix and then everything goes crazy.
I think that the Jupiter, it's to go back to that, I think the reason it has this vibe is the curtains, I remember, don't fully close.
So makes sense.
Against your will, you can, as people walk by, how many situations are people, it's totally normal to walk and you can be 6 inches from that crack in the curtains. So I think the reason I've had seen so many people have sex there, and I have, it's because my face was pressed against the glass.
You knew which room had the most split curtains, yeah, and you were going over there for no reason.
I'm walking by, but you can hear my nose go squeak as I'm looking. And my friend Katie and her husband are part owners of that place. I've not that I'm bragging. I know people in real estate, you two.
What?
Yeah, I know. She's from Missoula. She's an old Montana pal, and I've stayed there many times. It's another shout out to the Jupiter and Windex.
Also, is that the Doug Fir has that awesome diner? So
it,
like,
really,
yeah,
does.
In
amazing.
The morning, like when it's a comedy festival in the morning, everyone's going in. It has a very college dorm or college,
yeah,
cafeteria vibe where it's like, go get your waffles. People are coming or leaving. Or,
yeah.
And it's so fun.
I've only performed a couple times in that venue, but I love it. It's that terraced, like, semicircle. Isn't it sunken down? Am I making up a thing?
Yeah, it's you go downstairs, yeah, and it's like a downstairs treehouse vibe.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There's like logs everywhere and shit. It's incredible.
Totally.
And it sounds really good, and mm-hmm, and it is legitimately my favorite venue in the entire world.
Wow.
There's no better place.
I don't know why I've forgotten about, because I recorded my special in Portland, and someone told me where to do it, and it was a regular theater. Yeah, that's the best. It aesthetically looks like a 70s, yeah, carpet covered, like, tree fort vibe.
Like a lodge.
Yeah.
It looks,
yeah,
like a lodge.
Okay.
When I did that venue, I totally agree. There's like almost a built-in energy because of the way it's like they really mapped it out perfectly, especially for comedy, because I remember doing it and I was just doing regular stand-up. I wasn't doing music. And I was just like, this is what I've been working on the least. And I don't have a lot of faith in it. And I'm like, you can't not have faith when you go up there because this place is packed. Everyone's killing. Like, it's all good. And then I just felt like the way it was set up, it almost, it's like, it's telling the audience, like, you're in this very specific type of show and you're in a showroom almost. Like, the audience can look at each other and look at you. And it's just very, it feels like it was built to be supportive, like designed that way. Yeah. Feels like.
You know what it reminds me of is that a lot of places suck. A lot of places aren't that. A lot of places are terrible. I go to a lot of bad venues when I go on tour. That place is fucking great.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
Even venues that people, I of course won't name names. I probably will. They'll just fly out of my mouth. But when it's like banquet seating.
Oh my God.
And people have to look from the side. It's like, wait, is this the renowned? I almost said it. But it's like, I've heard so many good things. What if you have a stiff neck and you can't, people don't want to turn like that. And you're facing other people. Nothing will ruin a comedy show like facing your best friend's wife. You know what I mean? Like, I just like traditional theater, shoulder to shoulder. You forget that they're there, like you're at the movies.
Are you talking about that place in Hollywood?
No. It was, I'll tell you later because it's in Chicago. I was like, oh boy. I was very much excited. And then I was like, oh, it's a dinner banquet hall. There's glass everywhere and I can see cars and, I think it was a situation where I went to a place where there isn't always comedy and maybe it's better for like dinner theater lounge, you know, an improvised performance of David and Lisa or Who Murdered the Chef? I don't know. but yeah.
David and Lisa.
Yeah, I don't know.
That is a pull from the late 60s.
I did it. I was in that once, and I don't remember anything about it.
What did David and or Lisa do? I've never heard of this thing. What was the premise?
It was a play that then they made into a movie, and it's basically kind of about two disturbed, are they teenagers or like young people?
All I remembered, and correct me if I'm wrong, the audience was involved to interact. It was like not a choose your own adventure dictated by the audience, but if that hasn't been thought of, I just invented it. Don't steal my idea.
Poor man's copyright.
We've got it. There's a C with a circle around it. I thought it was I don't know what dinner theater is, except you're eating and watching.
No. Dinner, it would be like, that is a play.
Yeah.
That's a very weird play because it's basically about two people that are at like kind of like an asylum that find each other and fall
in
love. So to do that for dinner theater is kind of intense.
I didn't do it. I rehearsed it several times and then I was like, never mind, guys. And I moved to Austin and started doing stand up. It was a fork in the road where thank God the devil taught me the fiddle. What?
I am sort of curious now. I feel like when I see asylums on television, they're usually gender split. Asylums in real life have to be co-ed, but that seems like problematic.
Yes.
It seems like that could lead to all sorts of issues.
Oh, it for sure, I think.
Yeah.
Although I could be remembering this, like, I could be combining movies because I saw it as a movie. So I could definitely be combining plots, but I just know that they were both mentally unwell young people and that found each other.
Right.
But yeah, you don't want people like wandering around in robes that are like, you know, open back medical gowns or whatever.
Right. That might have challenges that sort of don't complement each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
That seems like that could get messy.
And it happens, I know from experience, not as a guest, but a visitor of, you know, assisted living facilities. People be fucking.
Yeah, it's true.
Everyone has crabs right now. I'm not trying to be dirty or sultry. It's something I experienced.
It's not sultry, so don't worry about that.
Old people dishing out old school crabs.
No.
I'm sorry. No. Everyone fucks. Let's talk about it. I'm holding a pineapple.
Chris, you've lost your mind.
I know. Hey, I'm just saying, if you're in a facility.
The pineapple comes up. Mike, you sounded very passionate when you were talking about bad venues. Do you want to just describe like a worst case scenario bad venue?
There's another place in Portland that to me is like, this is the AB. Like one of these places in Portland that I've played. I think I got tricked into thinking that like all the places in Portland were cool because I played like a couple cool places. And this one was like, it was like a theater. And, you know, luckily for me, there weren't seats, but it had that same sort of like sterile vibe. Mm-hmm. And the green room was a very small dressing room.
Yeah.
With, you know, with the light bulbs around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't need that shit. I need outlets and a place to smoke marijuana.
Yeah, yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
I don't.
You don't need a mirror to touch your own face and be like, come on, we can do this.
Yeah.
Like, there's no powder going on my nose at all.
Yeah.
But the vibe was too sterile. And it was a place where there's a balcony with a bunch of seats, and it was just like you could tell that this was a place that people go to because there's somebody there that they want to see, but they wouldn't go there just to have fun on their own. Like people don't just show up there to have a good time.
Yeah,
right.
And like those are the venues I typically don't like are the ones where people don't just go hang out. It's not a hang. It's like you kind of have to go to see the thing you want to see. And then you get the fuck out of there as soon as it's over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like there's a formality to it that isn't conducive to
what
show you do.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
It is funny. It's funny you bring up that light bulb blind mirror because every time I see it, I'm like, oh, for God's sake. What do I think I'm Liza Minnelli 30 years ago? It's showtime. Actually, it makes me nervous, those things. Yeah.
It should be called crisis mirrors.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for.
Well, I wasn't
just to
nervous.
Stare at yourself.
Yes, to look back on your life and the choices that have led you to this moment. Yeah. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
And then put on your black swan costume and go out there and dance, dance, dance.
That's so great. And I think I know exactly where you're talking about, but we'll wait till we're done recording. What are you working on now? Have any albums or have you been?
I'm finishing up stuff or any?
I'm
actually going to have a session with a couple of OGs tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to that.
Can
I've been
say who or do you want to?
Well, I don't want to say who because he might not come.
Oh shit!
Hey, but you said. And then you just get called on it.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter. But AC Alone's supposed to come through to the session tomorrow.
See, that's who I wanted. It's okay to. A lot of people are scared about putting things into the universe or jinxing things. I think it's good. I think you did a good thing by saying.
Well, you know, I thought about it, and worst case scenario, he hears this. It would be or somebody here, but it would be after it either happened or didn't happen anyway. So it'd be okay.
And he already wouldn't be listening because last time when I said something about Freestyle Fellowship being comedic rap. To me, it was I still flinch when I remember I said that. And so why would I repeat it now? The point is, my friends and I that's how we connected with that album. We were like, that is the funniest. Because, you know, everyone was kids when it's like probably 16 or 17, some of those songs. And I just liked the it was comedic. And
I think, they had funny moments.
Yeah,
they had little skits and sketches.
Yeah.
They had personality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I think it's probably tough to call them comedic because they were very technical.
Right.
They're very technical rappers. So it's like, you know, if you're a casual person hearing them, funny isn't the first thing that's going to come to your mind.
If someone's rapping and then they start singing like that, I mean, come on. Do you think everyone's going to be listening in turtlenecks? Like, oh, yes. You know, there would.
What a crescendo.
Yeah. Made me laugh. Like, all Black Sheep did that too. A lot of those groups, when they would break, I guess it's sudden breaking off into song makes me laugh. Maybe that's what it is. That's comedy
to me.
The
Far Side must have been
peak
comedy rap.
They legitimately funny lyrics though. There's no
way. Like they were trying to be funny in the raps and also breaking into song.
I was doing stand up at a Romo. Do you remember that, Karen? It was like not an open mic, but it was like a.
Was it upstairs?
It was ground level, like a seedy hotel, but I was talking. I don't ever do crowd work, but there was a guy with notebook and there was pieces of paper hanging out of it. And I was like, oh, are you going up tonight? And he's like, no, I'm a musician. And then I realized in that moment it was Fat Lip. And I was like, and I nerd out. I've liked this guy since I was a kid. And I'm like, I started like shaking. I'm like, does it begin with an F? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, you're like, what? I think you're, and then I just started eating it. But he was real nice. He went up to every comic he saw.
Wait, I'm sorry. This was during your set?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Oh shit. I didn't put that together either. This is way funnier.
I recognized him while talking. Hey, what are you, open mic comic? And I'm like, oh, fuck. I know your face. Yeah.
Wow, you're doing crowd work and happened upon someone you were a fan of.
Yes.
That's
like a fucking nightmare.
You're right. Horrifying.
I can't believe that's a fresh one. I've never even shared with you, Karen. It was.
Yeah, I've never heard that story before.
He was so sweet. And he was like hanging out and talking to all the he was like, I love comedy. And he went there to watch the show. I think he was there writing, you know, and then, hey, there's a comedy show. And he decided to stay, which that alone I appreciate.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah, it's so funny. While trying to do my crappy, what do you do for a living? Oh, my favorite of all time rap group? Okay. Yeah.
And it's probably harder because he's not like a household name. So like you're nerding out maybe by yourself.
Right.
On stage.
And
people are like, what is going on? Is this a bit? Like,
and I think maybe he appreciated that. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's hilarious. Also, what if the next time you heard, yes, he was in the Far Side. Sorry, I don't know this.
Yes, Fat Lip is in the Far Side.
I did see them at a festival one time that was at like Northridge, because I went with like Brian Posehn, a bunch of comics. And when their set started, it was as if everyone decided to start smoking pot at the same time. So this literal wall of pot smoke went up. Like people were doing it here and there, but suddenly it was just like there was a cloud in front of us in the middle of the day. It was one of the funniest, coolest things I'd ever seen.
I wish I knew what song it was. Maybe it would help explain.
Maybe it's Past the Pipes.
Yeah, that would make sense. Would they open with that?
Maybe.
Yeah.
In the 90s?
Was it a college show? Because
mm-hmm.
that was, they shouldn't open with that. It's not a great way to get booked again.
Yeah, you'd want to do the apple for my teacher because I knew I'd get a kiss one.
Yeah. That one's educational.
Yeah. Having a crush on your I just realized. Yeah.
Trick him into thinking that you're mostly an educational rapper that's going to talk about.
All these songs are about school.
Yeah.
They're all about school.
Teachers, apples.
Yeah. You know.
That's our thing.
Libraries, hanging out in libraries. Well, I'm excited for you to record in the studio tomorrow with the people you said that are going to be there.
Yes. He's the reason I'm a part of Project Blow.
Yeah.
Because of ACLO. Yeah.
That's terrific.
I
saw him here at the Virgil, and it was really, really great. And I didn't realize a lot of those Freestyle Fellowship songs were from when he was a kid, because he's like, oh, I wrote this when I was 17. And it was like
him and
skateboard, tennis shoe, ice cream shop, just a list of things that a kid would.
Oh, is that cornbread? Is that cornbread?
Yeah, it is cornbread.
Yeah, him and Micah 9, they had a group. Before Freestyle Fellowship, I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, they used to do routines. Like I interviewed Micah 9 for my podcast. He was telling me about this one time in the late 80s where like they saw Run DMC in a Burger King and they ran in and tried to battle them. And they kicked their rhymes and Run DMC was like, yeah, that's cool. Y'all talk to Jam Master Jay, and then they left because they had a plane to catch.
Yeah, they did it. We don't want a battle. We'll give you what you're looking for. Good job.
Right. Oh,
that's
man.
So
but yeah,
they saw him in a place, and they're like, "This is our chance." to defeat them.
They saw
them
in a Burger King. Yeah, that's a fucked up thing about rappers. We're so competitive, and it started out as such a street corner culture that if you're really into it, you're expecting other people to be ready to do it right now.
Yeah.
Right now. Like, Micah has multiple stories of running up to people and saying, "What's up with the real B-boy battle?" at their shows, at other people's shows.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He was always trying to do it, and half the time people would engage with him and do it too. He said Tupac used to rap with him all the time because Tupac knew whenever Micah saw him, that's what Michael was going to ask him to do.
Oh, wow.
But that's kind of, I mean, that feels to me very reflective of comics riffing in that way of, these are the people, there's not a lot of people that can do the thing that you can do. And it keeps you on your toes if there's the competitive edge to it, right?
Exactly that.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly that.
Well, the anxiety that washes over me, though, when someone says, "Hey, rap right now, freestyle rap right now." I there's been times where I will at least try, but usually I just will sweat. Karen and I have talked of jokingly, we've done it. Please don't listen to those episodes. but yet same goes for if someone was like, "You have to roast this comic." That's become a thing now that I think people are still into comedy roasts, right? Roast battles.
Yeah.
I
think it's become a niche. And much in the same way that like battle rap has sprung off and become these different niches within it. I think it's very similar.
Yeah. I don't want to. I almost did the boast battle where you.
Boast rattle where you do the compliments.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
exactly.
Those are cool.
Yeah. That's what I instinctively like back when Eliza Skinner had a show at UCB here, and I'm like, "Let's just compliment each other because you're a stranger." There was a ringer from the audience that was a really good rapper for just being, "Hey, how about you?" But they were raising their hand and jiggling it. But we just complimented each other's clothing and demeanor and face symmetric.
I used to do that show all the time. That's how I met a lot of people in the comedy scene out here, is that I would do that. I would do Eliza's.
Oh, okay.
Was it the Beatdown?
Yeah,
I think it was called.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to do that all the time.
That's great. I always wondered how you kind of were.
Well, that was part of it. And then I used to do, I used to beg them to let me be the ASCAT monologist.
Oh, hell yes.
And do music, you know? And so people, like the other improvisers would see how well that went.
Yes.
It was like my songs had funny shit in them. And so then they would invite me to do their shows. And then like I recorded, after the first time I did ASCAT, it went so fucking good. The next time I did it, I made sure that I had it videoed so I could like try to get on more shows.
Yeah.
And one of the people whose shows I was trying to get on was Paul F. Tompkins.
Yeah.
And I bugged him a lot and he checked out the video and he started having me on a couple of his Largo shows. And that, between that and Eliza's shit, like it just like everything opened up.
That's so great. Yeah. Those are the stomping grounds that I was focused on. And then
I snuck in
a normal monologue. It's like, oh, it's just more talking. And then they're going to, I think of a music version is great.
Those are fun nights.
Yeah.
Those were incredibly fun nights.
So wait, were you taking suggestions from the audience and then
I just came prepared to do songs of mine that worked in that environment.
Okay.
And then I would do the song and then they would say, "Hey, tell me a little bit about how you came up with that." And then they would riff
off of
the song and the context around the song.
Got it. Oh, yeah. For a second, I just thought you were taking suggestions where I'm like, that's fucking impossible. So hard.
Because
I would not have wanted to video that at all.
Yeah.
I would not have wanted to see that back after the fact.
And the times I've done it, you do as a monologist. Is that the right? Monologist?
I think so.
Monologist.
Monologist sounds professional.
Like, it does. It sounds classy.
Someone in the audience gives a word and that dictates what you talk about. Was that? It that way for you, Karen? I think version's better.
Yeah. Well, they let me do my shit and then they just riffed off of it and it was great.
Yeah, that is a really good idea. That's inversely the first improv class I ever took. And like week three, the improv teacher made us all get up and freestyle rap. And oh, I was like, please don't make me do this.
Like, that's really hard. Like, that's a really tough thing to ask people to do if they've never done it.
Yes.
Like, to do it in front of people for the first time.
For the first time. And also, I think for myself, first of all, taking this improv class was very, I wish I'd done it years before, because comedy is like, just played into all my control issues. And basically, I decide and I'm going to plan it and blah, blah, blah. And it's like memorization, essentially. Improv, of course, is the complete opposite of that. And right. It was very difficult in and of itself. But to me, like, freestyling is such a specialized ability that has so much to do with literally just like opening your mind and trusting your brain,
which
I do not feel that way about my brain or myself at all. And then that self-consciousness of like, this is absolutely going to go badly. It's not like I can pretend I'm a waitress and we're improvising a scene about ordering a hamburger.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you want me to just train of thought, like whatever's going to come out of my head? No, thanks. I don't want to reveal that shit about myself. Like it exposes you in so many
ways. You want to hear something interesting? That very line of thinking right there is why in the last couple years I have decided not to banter in my live shows, because I have learned the hard way that if I banter without a plan, I'm going to say something fucking dark.
Right. That's great.
And I'm going to suck the fucking energy out of the room and dig a hole that I have to climb out
this
of.
This is like my job on this podcast. Right? Yeah. How often, though, because there are times where I'm watching freestyle rap and I can tell some of the lines were sitting in the back pocket.
Sure.
Like,
absolutely.
And they're plugging in, some guys more than others, and the audience is all like, oh, this is freestyle. I'm like, no, that wasn't, and that wasn't. The in between was improvised, but is anyone called out? Like, it's, yeah, if you were, I'm doing a comedy show that's all crowd work and you see someone doing their jokes, it's the same. Do people get called out on that everywhere?
Not really, because I don't think people have the language to know how to call it out. Like,
right.
Because I did a thing for a long time where when I was on tour from city to city, when I was in a city that day, I'd be trying to like make notes of certain things in my head that I would reference during the freestyle. Sometimes, like, I would remember the four things so well and do a setup reference, that, like, I had a couple people ask me after, oh, did you write that before? Like,
right.
And it's like, no, I just noted some things and remembered them and kind of did them. But I don't think people have the language to be like, hey, did you think of that particular line before you got here?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if people are able to ask the sort of specific question you'd need to ask.
Right.
To get the answer, even if they sensed maybe it was prepared.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any room between completely prepared or completely improvised in a lot of people's minds when it comes to
right. And
like, you have to have done it.
Yeah. If I think of something that is funny in a town like that, I'm like, I'll ruin it if I actually overthink it. That's a funny premise. When my back's against the wall, my instincts comedically will know to say the right thing. I don't want to ruin it by actually writing a joke. I should write more. That's the excuse I've given myself. No, I'll just work it out on stage. My riffy, loose style will pull me through. Probably help if I type some shit out. But I know, I very much relate to exactly what you said. Like, just have the references there, and when you'll know what to do with them if you can just remember to have the four or five things sitting there.
I've gotten to the point now where I don't even like to do that anymore, though. Like, I like to freestyle, but I like to do it in a very pure sense of just letting my mind go somewhere rather than trying to build it around this hyper-local reference. Because I found myself, like, it started to feel too gimmicky. Because I know people who, like, they really gimmick the shit out of it.
Right.
And I can't stand it. Like, I know of quite a few people who do the thing where everybody take something out of your pockets and put it in the air.
Right.
And I'm gonna, I'm gonna, I'm going to freestyle about every item that I see. And I'm like, it's not easy, but it's also not very interesting.
No, like, short form game. That's like the freeze tag of rapping. Yeah. Give me this. Yeah. Oh, it's a steering wheel. And everyone laughs.
Yeah.
Because it's a plate. It's not a steering wheel. How do you do that?
But also that feeling, like one of the best feelings that I can remember, like the night and the time where it was like probably my fourth year in stand-up, and I was middling for someone at the Punchline in San Francisco. And as I was finishing a chunk and doing like I was on, say, the third to last joke in this area. And then I thought of another joke and said it, and it killed. And then I thought of another joke and said it, and it killed. And I was like, it was like, I was struck by lightning where I'm like, oh shit, that's the point.
Yeah.
I don't want to be up here as a monologist. I don't want to be just saying the same thing with a fresh take, like a weird actor. I actually want to be engaged in what my point is and think of better points. And that feeling is so fucking rad that like, that is the, like, however I can figure out a structure. And I still don't really know, but it's like the looseness scares the shit out of me. But that's where those new ideas come.
Yeah, through. The danger is where all the fucking energy is. And like, that's the same. That's like kind of the same thing. It's like, I don't want local reference guardrails.
Yeah.
Let's just fucking go somewhere.
Yeah.
Let's just fucking go.
And I'm afraid I do that now just because the looseness scares me. When I first started, I maybe didn't even know what I was going to talk about. I just had four beers. And I started talking and random. That's how I started. Yeah, I didn't know you were supposed to write stuff down. But and there are times, though, that it fails miserably, you know. And so that's why, out of fear, I started making the framework of comedy, which takes away that looseness.
But the reason freestyling is kind of a cheat code, because as long as people are conscious of the fact that you are making it up, it's really impossible to bomb.
Yeah.
Like the only way to bomb is that like you completely stop.
Right.
Like at some awkward place. Like that's the only way to bomb. Like as long as you're continuing to do it, even if you're fucking making up words, like people are fucking into it. They see it as this is cool.
Yes. You know?
That right there is why when I was doing both, there was animosity with the stand-up scene against improvisers, because it's like, oh fuck, they could say whatever up there. Because people loved improv, and I moved to Austin to do improv, but I realized it was two different camps, and that was the reason it was split. It's because they could say anything, and the audience was into it. They're like, that wasn't funny, but they just made it up, that unfunny thing. You know.
Question for both of you. Something that I've seen, because I know some people who are like Jedi master freestylers, that they can hit a new awesome thought every bar with a great setup and a great punchline, all completely off the head because they're that fucking good. But I've seen it where they lose a little impact because it's so good, people don't realize it's all being made up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to do that in improv, or possible to do that in riffing, where it's so good that people don't realize it's all being made up right then?
It's funny because this is exactly what, when you said people come up to you and they're like, "What? How much of that was improvised and what is written?" I always, in order to feel comfortable improvising, I had moments in my act that were once improvised that I'm retelling and pretending happened again by accident. For a while, that was my material, but then it gave you room to actually take the risk of improvising, because I have this planned improv, but it's a bit. But it all seems improvised, but just like I assume with a lot of freestyle rappers have stuff in their pocket, I'm the one that does that with stand-up. That's why I'm so interested in this, talking about this. It's because, I, with my comedy, do that. I have fake improv, so I feel safe to then actually try an improv. And if that falls flat, I always have my Chambles Kunky Soup or whatever. A thing I said once actually because of Paul F. Tompkins, he was like, always say Chambles Conkey, because I just did that reversal. And it, Chambles Conkey became one of my jokes because of Paul.
Well, also, that question makes me think, because I started stand-up in San Francisco, and it was some of the smartest, best stand-ups. It was like, you know, the early 90s. So it was like we would go every night and get to watch like Greg Proops do 45-minute sets. Yeah. And he was absolutely riffing for three quarters of his set. And he was riffing on a level that it was like he was writing brand new sets every night. Yeah. Whereas there was other people that you would go see, and the first time you saw them, and this happened, like, I think it happens to everybody when they start stand-up, is you open for somebody the first night, they're the funniest person you've ever seen. The second night, you're like, oh, I get it. You're doing exactly the same thing. And then basically it's like it goes downhill from there. But then there were certain comics, like Dana Gould, I think, Greg Proops. There were people who got on stage and like they did crowd work and they did stuff and they just were talking. And so I think the delivery was so low key that no one thought it was like, I felt it sitting in the back, like I could see the miracle that was so hard to recognize because it was just so conversational. Yeah. But it was like Greg Proops, especially. I watched him one time, a lady said something about Finland, and he said, well, that's actually not true. And then got into an argument and picked up the mic stand and started drawing in the air a map of Scandinavia. And I was in the back like, I couldn't tell you what countries are in this area. Yeah, and he is literally like putting this woman very politely in her place, but also saying like, please don't come at me about Finland because I'm going to school you in a severe way. And it was like that. I think that set in my mind this thing where it's like, it's not about getting this standing ovation from these people. It's those fucking comics. They'll know. Mm. They'll know if you're just doing the same act. Yeah. They'll know what you're doing and if you're making something up. And then it's that idea, like, you know, Paul or Andy Kindler, there's a lot of people like that. When you could hear them laughing, you were like, okay, I'm doing something.
And I'm one to testify that the living you can make off of other comics liking you is so lucrative. That back of the room money.
Bullshit.
I mean, look at this place. That wallpaper didn't buy itself. It's funny you brought up Greg Proops because I've always wondered what that is. One of the main, when I first would see him at Largo, I'm like, some of this has to be planned, but it might be fake loose so he can actually riff. You're saying he just was,
but most of the time, and especially at shows like Largo, he would do whatever he wanted because I think his IQ is like fucking 200 or something. I mean, like he just is. I've just seen him so many sets of his that it was proven to me that he is like kind of masterful.
Yeah.
In that way. So I think there are, it's just hard. I think the people that are really, really good at it are hard to recognize because being low key is part of their style.
Right.
It's not the big like, da da da.
Yeah.
Right. They're not telling you that they're making this up. They're just making it up.
Yep. Yeah. Yes.
I guess I've always realized it, but I love how we are realizing right now what similar worlds hip hop and comedy are.
Yeah, well, you know,
creatively and stuff.
I'm pretty comfortable in both, and also feel out of place in both.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love it.
Well, that went by really fast.
I knew it would.
I agree.
That was one of our faster podcasts, but we're so excited to have you back. Obviously, we're nerds for you, Mike.
Yeah,
just are.
It makes my heart fill up with anxiety and intimidation.
No, you make this easy, and we were gloating about you after recording last time, and it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me back. This is super fun, and I'm way more comfortable this time. So
isn't that funny? Everyone's nervous. We were nervous.
I was very nervous.
Oh, I love it.
Do you have anything you want to plug or like?
Yeah.
Aside from the
Well, you know what? I'm streaming on Twitch a lot. So if you don't know that, check me out there. I'm twitch.com/open_Mike_Eagle. I'm doing it a lot.
Oh, cool.
So I need to let people know.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. That's the hardest part of this job.
That's the part. That's the yeah. part.
Yeah. What kind of a narcissist lets people know they're doing things? thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN. AR. This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Mixed by Edson Choi.
Our talent booker is Patrick Kottner.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Hong Kong.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.